listener production.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Why am I jealous of my ex?
I am so stressed all the time.
How do I get into a routine?
Is TikTok making me anxious?
I think I'm being manipulated.
Someone told me you could live with half a brain.
This is Do You Fucking Mind? Mindset Hacks for a Badass Life. Hosted by me, Alexis Fernandez. Hello, my beautiful beans, and welcome to the episode of today. So in this episode, I'm actually pretty excited to talk about this particular topic because it is something that I've had a lot of questions about. I've also had a lot of episodes that talk about different, like the important parts of dating, but I thought I'd do an entire episode that is all around the top 10 non-negotiables for dating. It's easy to look at, and I think I've dabbled into this before, but it's easy to look at a relationship and think, but I love this person. I love them so much. They love me. We adore each other. But love, unfortunately, is absolutely not enough in a relationship. Love is not enough. There is so much more that is needed, not only for a relationship to be fulfilling for both parties, healthy for both parties, and also to have longevity. Because there's a lot of relationships where you love someone so hard, but there's so many things that just don't work. And you need much more than that. You need compatibility within reason. You don't have to be compatible as in you don't have to match on absolutely everything, but you do have to be compatible in the sense that you do have to kind of complement each other's lives. And then there's a lot of other factors that we have to consider in a relationship, which I'm going to break down into the 10 points that allow the other person not only to flourish within the relationship, but to flourish as an independent person. And what a lot of people fear when it comes to relationships, especially those people that have had, you know, that have been burnt in the past or have an insecure attachment style or an anxious attachment style or even avoidant attachment, a lot of people in that position feel that they need some level of control and they have to administer some sort of dominance over the other person, even if it's not in the outward dominant, but more passive dominance, as in a way of controlling their partner because they don't want to lose their partner. But ironically, the more controlling you are with your partner, the more you try and hold them down, the higher the chances of this person feeling like they're not maximizing their personal potential and the relationship struggling, suffering, or breaking down altogether. The more you encourage someone's own independence and ability to just be who they're going to be, if they reciprocate, the higher the likelihood that you can succeed as a couple long term. So I'm going to be going into a whole bunch of things that are absolute non-negotiables. Some sound obvious and some are probably ones that you think, oh, I never realized that was actually so important in a relationship. Cool beans, life update, the live show. I'm so excited for the live show, guys. If you haven't yet gotten your tickets, we have sold so many already. It's in Marrickville in Sydney. I've only got one show. It's in Sydney. It's at the Factory Theatre, and I am so fucking excited for this night. If you guys, I'd never been to the Factory Theatre up until the other day, and I went with Shania. We checked it out, stood on the stage. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be standing here and looking at all you guys that have already bought tickets, talking to you. I've already got all these things planned for how the night's going to go. I'm in the process of fleshing out the show, and there's all these ideas that I'm throwing around. And then after the show, there's this really cool, like outdoor, cool bar garden area outside the venue that we can all flock to afterwards, maybe for like an hour or so. And maybe I can like meet some of you and have a quick little chat. So we're pumped about this. If you haven't gotten your tickets, get your fucking tickets. It's going to be extremely special. Like the first ever live show, it's going to just mean the world to me. So that's pretty much my life update. That's what I did yesterday and it was great. And then I went and got a donut, not Spon, but Grumpy Donuts. So fucking delicious. If you guys have had it, wow, amazing. Anyway, before we get into the topic of today, I did want to go into a little like sciencey brain fact. I'm kind of reintroducing some science brain facts into some of my episodes again because I miss it. But we're going to be talking about the different nervous systems. And I think that it's important to talk about the different nervous systems as a bit of like an overview, because I don't know about you guys, but there's, you know, you hear things like the central nervous system, the peripheral, the enteric, the somatic, the, you know, sympathetic, parasympathetic. And it's like, it's pretty confusing, especially if you haven't really like broken it down or studied it or paid close attention. Then you start thinking, how many fucking nervous systems does one want to have? 7, it turns out. Well, 7 that I've actually written down. So let's hope that I'm right when I say that. So what I was going to do is quickly break down all 7 so that way you can be like, next time somebody is talking about a nervous system, I know exactly what they're talking about, or at least I have some vague idea of what they're talking about and what that nervous system is in comparison to another kind of nervous system. Okay. So we're going to, let's start by talking about, so there's 7 of them, like I said, I'll go through them. Central nervous system, peripheral nervous system, autonomic nervous system, somatic nervous system, enteric nervous system, parasympathetic nervous system, and sympathetic nervous system. Okay. All right. So let's start with the central nervous system. The central nervous system is anything referring to the nervous system within the brain, brainstem, and spinal cord. That is your central nervous system. So you're going to have things within the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, which I'll talk about in a second. But anything that's occurring within brain, spinal cord, and brainstem, that is your CNS, your central nervous system, what's encapsulated within the skull and within the spinal cord, okay? Or that like cavity where the spinal cord sits in. Then we've got the peripheral nervous system. So the peripheral nervous system is anything outside of that, all the nerves that branch off from the spinal cord and extend to the rest of the body, okay? Except for the 12 pairs of cranial nerves, okay? So we're thinking every nerve that extends out from the spinal cord is the peripheral nervous system, but your cranial nerves, which innervate the face muscles, the head, right? There's 12 pairs of cranial nerves and they arise directly from the brain and the brain stem, but they are generally considered part of the peripheral nervous system in general. So it's a bit of a, depends on what you're talking about or who you're talking to. Sometimes they'll talk about it being the peripheral nervous system. Sometimes they talk about it being the central nervous system. But the first and second pair are definitely considered the central nervous system because they, if you want to get into the science a bit, stay tuned if you don't, fast forward 2 minutes. But one of the best ways to identify the difference between if something is within the central nervous system versus the peripheral nervous system is looking at how the axons are myelinated. Myelin is that fatty matter that wraps around the axons. And I've done a whole brain fact on myelin, and it allows the conduction of the information from one neuron to another to occur and to occur in a really quick and efficient way. So myelin, it's fat, it's made out of fat. The more myelinated axons we have within our brain, the healthier in general the brain is going to be. There's a lot of diseases that attack the myelin and it causes a lot of disability. Anyway, so there's different kinds of myelin. If the myelin is occurring within the central nervous system, it's produced by cells called oligodendrocytes. So these 2 pairs of cranial nerves are myelinated by oligodendrocytes. And if the nerves are myelinated by Schwann cells, which is a different kind of cell that produces myelin, but it produces it in the peripheral nervous system. So it's still myelin, but if it's done by Schwann cells, peripheral nervous system. If it's done by oligodendrocytes, central nervous system. So there's a little fun fact, especially if you're currently studying like anatomy of the brain or something like that. I found that quite helpful to remember when I was studying. Then we've got the autonomic and somatic nervous system. So somatic nervous system is skeletal. It's conscious, sometimes unconscious, but it's mainly conscious. And you're thinking one synapse. So motor neuron from the central nervous system to the effector. So we're thinking movement, basically, like it's just one neuron from, you know, the central nervous system, spinal cord, basically, innervating the muscle, arm to extend, contract muscles, like any movement, any conscious movement that you're making, that is through the somatic nervous system. And the neurotransmitter, the chemical that's used here is acetylcholine. Then we've got the autonomic nervous system. This is involuntary. This is the functions of internal organs, some peripheral muscles, smooth and cardiac muscles, glands. So this is unconscious regulation. And here we've got 2 synapses, okay? So you've got a ganglion. I'm not going to go into it, but basically you've got basically 2 neurons, 2, like one thing that synapses onto another, which synapses onto the last one. So it's 2 neurons, which are needed for the thing to occur, for the movement, for whatever to occur, okay? Then let's talk about the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous systems very quickly. So sympathetic is within the autonomic nervous system. So I just said somatic nervous system is voluntary, autonomic is involuntary. Within this autonomic nervous system, you've got sympathetic and parasympathetic. So far that's making sense. We're breaking it down even further. So sympathetic is your flight or fright response, okay? This is what puts the body on high alert. This is when your safety is at risk. This is also anxiety, because anxiety is thinking that your safety is at risk. Otherwise, you wouldn't be anxious. You feel like, I need to be on high alert. Something bad is going to happen. Whether it's a physical threat or whether it's an emotional threat, it's still this like, something bad is going to happen. I'm at risk. I'm at risk of being abandoned. I'm at risk of being rejected. I'm at risk of being attacked. It's a risk, okay? And when this happens for a long time, it puts a lot of strain on the body when this is active for too long. I'm going to explain what happens when this is firing for way too long, when this is going on for way too long. And it's going to give you an insight into why it is that stress and chronic anxiety is so bad for your health. Because chronic anxiety, it's not just like, oh, I'm thinking a thought and it's an unpleasant thought. Your body goes through processes when you have this thought, this flight or fright, these fear-based thoughts, and it's actually changing how your body is responding. It affects your digestion and all these things. So for example, when this happens, because imagine if you're thinking my body needs to only focus on things that are going to help protect myself, survival, it's going to shut down everything that's not related to survival. So your pupils dilate so you can zone in, you're more focused, okay? Your airways dilate. You can take in more oxygen because you need to run away from something, okay? Saliva is inhibited. We don't need to be producing saliva right now. Your heart rate is increased. We need blood flow. We need oxygen to the extremities of our body quickly, quickly, so we can take action. We've got inhibition of digestion. We don't need to be digesting when we're trying to survive. That's secondary. It's not immediate for our survival. Glucose gets released in the liver. Kidneys release adrenaline. Your bladder relaxes. And there's also much less blood going to the reproductive systems as well. Okay, so now that we understand that, imagine what's happening if you're chronically stressed, if you have chronic anxiety. These things are going to be causing health problems within the body. So when you hear about someone that's got chronic stress, chronic anxiety, and how it's actually making them sick, how it's making them unwell, now hopefully that helps you understand why that might be the case. Then we've got the parasympathetic nervous system, which is again within the autonomic nervous system, and that balances out the sympathetic. So it's like night and day, you know, with the two. So this sympathetic nervous system helps control the body at rest. This is your, it's where you reduce your body's activities. This is your rest and digest state. It's your feed and breed, okay? So this allows your pupils to constrict. It limits light in because you're resting. You don't need so much light. You don't need to be taking in all this crazy information. It produces more saliva, which is really good for your digestion. It obviously promotes digestion. It allows your lungs to do less work by making your airways a little bit smaller. You're more relaxed. You don't need to be like hyperventilating. It lowers your heart rate, slows it down. It's increasing your rate of digestion. It also, your waste removal, bowel movements, that occurs again in a healthy way. And also this is where it focuses on the sexual functions. This is feeling aroused, providing fluids within the body that allow for lubrication during sex, all of that. That all occurs in the rest and digest. This is parasympathetic. Sympathetic is, I need to save my life, get the fuck away from this threat. Parasympathetic, rest and digest, feed and breed, all of that, okay? And then we've got, I actually didn't delve into the enteric nervous system, but this is quite a large nervous system within the peripheral nervous system. And this is like the gut and everything to do with the gut as well and how that links. The reason I'm not delving into this is because I have to do like another episode on like the gut brain axis and all of that. But the last one is enteric nervous system. So hopefully that's given you a little bit of an overview, a brush over the seven. So we've got central nervous system, peripheral nervous system, somatic nervous system, which remember is conscious movement, primarily. Autonomic nervous system, that's involuntary. Within autonomic, we've got sympathetic, flight or fright, and parasympathetic, rest and digest. And then we've got the enteric nervous system. Guys, I really hope that kind of wrapped it up for you quite nicely. I like to package things nicely. When someone tells me, oh, here's a part of the brain or here's something that the body does, I'm like, yes, but is that everything? Do I need to know another 10 of these things? Like what I, when I would study neuroscience, you should see like my notebooks, I would have to have like everything drawn out in a little, you know, diagram, and it all would have to be packaged in. So when someone talks about multiple nervous systems, I want a list, even if I don't know them all in depth, I just want to know what I'm dealing with, what I'm looking at. So hopefully that helps compartmentalize the concept of the nervous system for you. I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast, and I love to, I will fucking toot my own horn when people started studying science because of this podcast. That makes me so happy. I mean, I'm not doing the work, you're doing the work, but it still makes me so happy. So hopefully that helps with your study. Now let's go into the top 10 non-negotiables. Definitely not negotiable. Top 10 non-negotiables for dating. Now these are, before I go into the top 10, I just want to say that these 10 things, if you are currently dating someone and you're like, oh my God, we don't have this. It's not to say cut them dry, fucking see you later, catch your cunt, on to the next person. Instead, it could be like, all right, mate, you know, we're all evolving beings. We all, as it's all about awareness. Don't be hard on yourself. Just be aware. You might listen to this and be like, oh yeah, right. Oh, I haven't thought about that. Oh, maybe I can get my partner to listen to this too. Maybe they'll have a light bulb moment too. And maybe together we can find ways that we can work on having these things. Because when these things are ticked off, I can guarantee you, your relationship will be healthier, stronger, and you'll likely have more longevity in that relationship if both people are pulling the weight, okay? Number one, and this is so obvious, but it has to be said, a safe space to communicate your feelings. This is a situation where, and when I say this, I'm not just saying make sure that your partner allows you to talk about your feelings. More than that, because that's important, more than that is how often do you let your partner talk about their feelings without getting defensive, without shutting them down, without interrupting, without a but the reason why you also do this wrong. You're allowed to voice your opinions. You're allowed to raise things. But when your partner raises something about you, this is not your opportunity to come back with everything else they've done wrong as well. This is your opportunity to hear what they have to say and to really dig deep and say, as much as my pride wants to be like, how dare you attack me when you've done so much wrong too in this relationship, instead be like, all right, I'm going to listen to what they have to say. Because if I can be receptive, then it allows a platform for me to talk about things later, not right now, and for them to be receptive. Okay. Someone has to start. Someone has to be the one that leads by example. And it can be you in this regard. So if your partner wants to talk to you, just say, am I actually creating a safe space for my partner to talk to me? Because so often relationships will break down and people will say, I never knew. I never saw it coming. But maybe you didn't allow for a safe space. And maybe the reason that you never saw it coming was because you didn't feel like you had, because your partner basically didn't feel like they could even talk to you about it. It was not safe for them, or they felt ridiculed or shut down or abandoned every time they did try and talk. And then of course, vice versa. Do you have that safe space? Can you say to your partner, hey, you know, this is what I need to talk about. Also, when I talk about safe space, I'm not talking about when you're in a screaming match, fighting, screaming, arguing. And that is when you pick the moment to be like, this is what I hate. What you do in the mornings, every morning you do this and I hate it. That is not going to be received well. I'm talking about you being calm and saying, this is a calm moment. I'm going to approach something that I need to talk about. Okay. That's number one. Number two, no character assassination ever. It is so refreshing and healthy when you can meet someone that can argue a topic. It's also okay to get heated. We're only human. You know, yes, it's nice to always keep your cool, and that's the aim. I try my best to keep my cool, but I'm not going to lie and say that I never get heated. Of course I get heated. We react in the moment. That is just part of our nature, especially when we're emotional. I guess the main thing here is learning to talk ourselves off the ledge quickly and not let it go on for hours. But when you are heated, when you do feel this way towards your partner, to still be able to stick to the action of or the lack of action of what you're discussing instead of your partner's character. To say things like fuck off, get fucked, to say things like you're a fucking idiot, you're a cunt, you're this, that is character assassination, okay? Whenever possible, try not to do that. And also don't do that to yourself. We do this to ourselves all the fucking time with our relationship with ourselves. These 10 things you could say, how I can improve my relationship with myself doing these top 10 non-negotiables for fucking me. But no character assassination. Don't do it. Bite your tongue if you need to. But this is an opportunity to, and this teaches you to communicate better because it's very easy to turn to your partner and say, you're a fucking cunt, you're a fuckwit because of this, you're that. But that doesn't actually get you anywhere. Learn how to communicate what you actually feel. What do you feel? You could say, I feel that that action was selfish. You didn't factor me in. Why was that? Was that intentional? Did you blah, 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 blah. But if you say, you're such an asshole, they're going to be like, okay, cool. I'm an asshole then. I'm a fucking asshole. And then they get all defensive and then it gets nowhere. So no character assassination. Talk about the action. We are talking about the action. And to teach your partner, if you really want to guide them through this and they call you a name, you could say, I'm going to give you one more chance to express what you're feeling. But instead of character assassinating me or instead of name calling me, can you talk about what action you're frustrated about? If you have the patience to do that, I know a lot of people when they've just been screamed at probably don't want to do that, but that's a really good teachable moment for your partner if you have like the control of your emotions in that time. Number three, we have autonomy and a sense of one's own identity to be encouraged in each other, okay? There is so much to be said for the importance of autonomy in a relationship, and that is basically your power over yourself, your ability to make decisions for yourself, your ability to know what's right for yourself and what's wrong for yourself, to listen to your instincts, to listen to your desires. That is having autonomy. I have control over what I want to do as an individual. If you celebrate that in each other, then you both feel A, that you have autonomy, number one, and B, that you have someone that is celebrating this autonomy. That makes you feel very safe in a relationship. Someone controlling you makes you feel pretty unsafe because you think they're only happy if I'm doing it the way they want me to do it. I have to do something. There's like, it's conditional. A lot of things are conditional. Like they'll like me if I do this, but then they'll be disappointed if I don't do this. There's a lot of disappointment when you don't allow for autonomy. People constantly getting disappointed, constantly feeling let down. People set themselves up to be let down in relationships all the fucking time, okay? So allowing for someone to have their own identity, their own autonomy, and celebrating that is crucial to be closer, ironically. Because when you shut down this personal independence, when everything has to be done together, when you have a joint fucking Facebook account, when everything's one person, then you lose your sense of self. And that is your fucking ticket to depression. Okay? You cannot lose your sense of self ever. I don't care how many kids you have. I don't care how intertwined your family is. You should always, always, always have a sense of self, your own identity. You can be as close as you want to the people around you. But the more independent you feel, the more control you have over your life, the happier and more vulnerable, more receptive you're going to be to healthy relationships around you. So not only should you have that for yourself, but you should celebrate it when you see your partner doing things for themselves as well. You should cheer them on, okay? Encourage it. Number four, you need to welcome bids for connection. There's a study that was done. I've already referenced this study in the podcast in the past, but basically it was a study that was done on people that would, a bid for connection basically is where a partner says, oh, look at that bird. If the other partner ignores it because you've been together for 5 years, 10 years, 40 years, the other partner's like, That is a lost opportunity for a bid for connection. When someone says, oh my God, look at that beautiful bird. Or, oh, look at that. Yeah, okay, they like it. But they're basically saying, I want a connection. I want a moment of connection. I want us to experience this together. The couples that would turn around and say, oh, that is such a beautiful bird. They acknowledge this bid for connection and they engage. Who cares how trivial the thing is? It's normally on trivial things, but it's just like, I want to connect. Can you engage? And this is not about being needy. This is about just like a bid for connection. Let's have this beautiful moment together. Let's share in these beautiful moments together. It's different to be like, one sec, babe, I'm really focused on this. I'll give you out. Like, let me have this for an hour. It's not like you can be annoying your partner 24/7 being like, I need a bid for connection. But it's just when someone notices something, does the partner react in a positive way or does the partner shut them down? That alone, this bid for connections versus being shut down or being ignored, was a determining factor of if those couples would stay together years later down the track. Literally, like it could predict it by quite a big degree. Because when you feel like your partner is acknowledging something that you're appreciating or that you're enjoying or that you're liking, that makes you feel more connected to them. So pay attention to when your partner makes a bid for connection and when you make a bid for connection, and make sure that they don't go unnoticed. And if you're sitting here thinking, fuck, my partner always ignores my bids for connection, then it's just, to start off, just talk to them about it. Say, hey, I learned this thing today. And maybe I get frustrated about these other things that seem irrelevant because I feel ignored in all these other ways. Maybe we could find a way of getting better at connecting when we have these little bids. When I make a comment, if you would just listen to what I have to say and engage, then I would probably feel less needy overall. You know, so it really helps people feel appreciated and noticed. And then it allows you to actually feel a lot calmer in general in the relationship because you have this bid for connection that's being fulfilled. It's a really, really interesting psychology around it. Number five, this is so important. Non-negotiable is that both parties seek to understand over needing to be right. When we have an argument, this overarching thing of like, we are arguing and they look at it as a fight. An argument is a fight. Someone has to win, someone has to lose. It's this match that's on. But instead of looking at it that way, you could say we're having a disagreement. I don't know how you want to call it, but it doesn't have to be where one person has to come on top. Because what happens then when no one can win the argument or when one person has to be right? What happens? There's a crack, right? Because if you can't patch that up, then what? So instead of that, you could approach it thinking there are going to be many times in this relationship where we are not going to see eye to eye on something. And really, what's the alternative? We either are miserable at each other or we learn to live with the fact that we're going to disagree on things. We've come from different histories. We've got different pasts. That's going to happen. So instead, when I have a disagreement with my partner, I don't have to agree. I don't have to lay down and say, fuck, you're right, I'm wrong. No, but what I will aim to do is to hear them out. Because for me, if I disagree with my partner, Tyrone, to just have be like, oh, we disagree. We just, you know, shut it down. We just agree to disagree. You can do that, but healthier than saying agree to disagree before you agree to disagree, because I think that is a good thing to do when necessary. Before you just shut it down and say, oh, we've got all these differences. I don't want to talk about it. I'm not breaching that topic. You could say, let me know how do you feel about it? What are your insights? How did you come to that conclusion? Why do you feel that way? And then you understand. So even though you still think, no, I still disagree, but I kind of get where they're coming from, or I get why they came to that conclusion, or I get why they have these fears or why they react in the way they react, and vice versa. So when you start learning to discuss topics and issues within the relationship, more from a perspective of like, let's just understand each other. Seek to understand each other, then you don't have to be right. So one thing that I've learned massively from my partner, Tyrone, is that when we have a disagreement, and what I love about, and mind you, this is not every single time we've had a disagreement. I'm not going to stand here and say that Tyrone and I have never fought. Of course we've fought. Absolutely we've fought. But in general, I'd say 99% of the time, or what, 90% of the time, whatever you want to call it, what I've really learned and what I love about how he controls himself in an argument is that even when we're annoyed at each other, when we're shitty, when I'm like, this is the 10th time I've had to bring this up, or when he said, you know, you've left this out, how many times do I, blah, 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 and we're like hated at each other for something, whatever, whether it be big or menial, he always, his bid for connection or apology or whatever, or not even an apology, but his way of connecting with me is by hugging me. So he'll come up and it's his peace offering. Okay. So this is not in the list of 10, but I'm going to add it as a bonus one. I understand what your partner's peace offering is and learn to read it. So when Tyrone and I argue, Tyrone's peace offering is to come up and hug me. He's not saying, I'm right, you're wrong, this is a pity hug. He's not saying, I'm sorry, you're right, I'm wrong, and this is my way of apologizing. It's not an apology. It's saying, I am creating peace. We don't have to get to the bottom of this in order to be okay. He has taught me, because I've had some volatile relationships in my past, and while I knew what a healthy relationship was like on paper, now I'm experiencing it in real time. And what he's taught me is you can be not on the same page about something, but still have the warmest feelings towards each other. You don't have to fight. You can acknowledge we're still not on the same page. This is a work in progress, but we can still love each other. And we can still be really kind to each other, and we can still be affectionate, and we can still have physical touch. So even though we still haven't gotten to the bottom of it, we may never, we can still be really affectionate with each other and kind. And instantly the frustration goes, the issue exists still, but the anger and the frustration fades away very, very quickly. So Tyrone's peace offering is a hug, okay? My sister's partner's peace offering is he'll make her a coffee. So she'll be like, if they're annoyed, she'll hear the coffee machine go. And she's like, that's his peace offering. That's him being like, this is me bidding for a connection. This is, let's just not fight anymore. And let's, you know. So when you see your partner make a peace offering, please accept it. Because you're not saying, all right, it's done. We're brushing it under the rug. It's not brushing it under the rug. It's saying, no matter what, let's just hold and be kind to each other. That's huge. That's huge. And if your partner's willing to give a peace offering, that's massive. You take it with both fucking hands. You're not saying, oh, no, we're forgetting about it. You're saying, I agree. We should be at peace with each other. We can work through these things at peace. Okay? And ask yourself, what's my peace offering? Do I have one? Most of us do. Some people's peace offering is to be like, hey, so do you want to go and do this thing? They just invite the person to do something. I think that's my peace offering. My peace offering is to kind of, after it's gone all quiet, I walk in and be like, so did you want to go and like, I'll invite Tyrone to do something with me. Even, do you want to watch a movie or did you want to go for a walk? Do you want to walk the dog with me? Whatever. Okay. Ask yourself, what is my partner's peace offering? What's my peace offering? And it's really cute when you learn what someone's peace offering is, because then when you identify it, you're like, oh, they're just basically showing, I want to feel connected with you again. I want to be loving again. And that's really, really beautiful. Okay. If you don't know what your peace offering is, come up with a peace offering. Have a new one. Have one that you like. So that was a bonus one. Number six. Well, actually, number six is kind of tied into number five, not having to be angry just because you disagree. So that's, I've already discussed that in the peace offering and all of that. So that kind of is in there. Number seven, put in an effort to understand how the other person receives love and feels love and try your best to cater to that and vice versa. So this comes into love languages. Like some people will show their love. They'll shower their partner with gifts because that's how they like to give love. That's how they might like to receive love. And it will be like gifts, 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 gifts. And you might be thinking, this person is so superficial. They don't love me. They weren't there for me on the important moments. They weren't there for me when I got that promotion and they didn't call me. They didn't, you know, so, but they might be thinking, I'm thinking of this person when I'm not with them. So I'm going to buy them this little gift because it, you know, gift giving is very much a gesture of love. And if that is your love language, you see it as that. But if you're someone that's like, oh, that's superficial, it's not superficial. It might feel superficial for you, but for them, that's how they give love. Other people, it's like, I need physical touch. That's how I feel loved and connected. And so they might be like, oh, our relationships is in shambles because we haven't had physical touch or we haven't had sex in a week. And the other partner's like, what? I thought we were really good. I thought we were fine. But you're feeling unloved because I haven't touched you. Meanwhile, your partner's like, we've had this quality time together. It's been amazing. So I think it's really important to just talk first, obviously, and be like, when do you feel most loved? Is it when I put my arm around you in public? Is it when we're at home and we cuddle? Is it when I tell you that I'm proud of you? Is it when I tell you I love you? Is it words of affirmation? Is it when I've bought you a gift and you're like, oh my God, they were thinking of me when I wasn't there? Is it, what is it? Acts of service. Tyrone shows his love through acts of service 1,000 times over. He is an acts of service man. And for me, I think I show my love through quality time and words of affirmation, maybe. I don't know. I think so. There's a test. So go do the test. Do the test online. It's called the Love Languages test, lol. And it's a fun thing to do with your partner together. So understand how your partner receives love and try your best to cater to it. You don't have to agree with it in order to do that something nice for your partner. If my partner loved, you know, words of affirmation and I wasn't someone that would give words of affirmation, I would still give words of affirmation because I want them to feel loved. I want to give love in a way that's going to be received. And if that's how they receive it, that's how I'm going to give it. Number 8, make sure that you encourage strong relationships outside of your immediate relationship. It's so important for you to encourage them to still have these relationships with their siblings, with their best friends, with their friendship groups, with the whatever. Celebrate those relationships. It makes somebody a well-rounded person. A lot of people fall into the trap of isolating themselves when they get into a relationship. And then it's really hard years down the track to have, like, you still have your longtime friends, like your like school friends and your this friends and whatever. But then when you're like, I don't have a group of friends that I can socialize with on a regular basis because I kind of abandoned them all when I got into this relationship and was in a bubble, and that bubble blew out to a 2-year time frame. And now I'm struggling to make friends. So try your best, whether your relationship is 1 week old or decades old, to still encourage healthy friendships outside of your relationship. It is so important. It is crucial for our overall happiness. It's our connection to the outside world. It is how we, you know, social connections are as important as romantic connections, as important. So you don't want to be in a relationship where you're trying to hoard your partner, where your partner is trying to hoard you and your time and your attention. Don't do it to yourself. Number 9, honoring your own boundaries and making them clear. And just as important, respecting your other person, your partner's boundaries as well. Now, if you're unsure about the difference between a boundary and controlling behavior, check out episode 284. It's called Boundaries versus Controlling Behavior. And I break it down in detail because there's a huge difference where people will set a quote unquote boundary, but it's basically a way of controlling their partner's behavior. And I'll just kind of try to summarize it very, very quickly. A boundary has everything to do with just you. It is extremely personal. So you saying to your partner, you having coffee with your male friends or your female friends or whatever is crossing a boundary. That's not a boundary. You can't set that boundary because it's got nothing to do with you. Okay. But if you say, when you scream at me, you are crossing a boundary, there's something you can do about it because a boundary is something that you have control over. When someone crosses it, you remove yourself away. And it's very personal. It's directly related to you. So imagine that you've got a fence around you, and if some stranger's going into the fence, then you can say, okay, I'm going to push you out of that fence. You've crossed the boundary. When someone says, you know, you wearing that item of clothes is crossing a boundary, that's you controlling that person because it's got nothing directly related to you, okay? It's hurting your ego, but that's not you. It's your ego. So listen to the episode. I go into it in depth, but there's a massive, massive difference. And if you're like, oh, my partner's always throwing down the boundary card as a way of controlling me, then get your partner to listen to that episode. And I know that it's a great episode because I had so many people saying, thank you so much for clarifying this. I'm now so much healthier to my partner after listening to this because I would sometimes try and control my partner, you know, by calling something a boundary when in reality it was just an excuse to tell them what to do and what not to do. And then lastly, this is similar to bids of connection, but it's not. It's sharing in the good moments often. So this is where you have genuine fun with your partner. So there are studies that have been done on couples where, okay, let's just, without a doubt, being there for your partner during the hard times are absolutely important. There's no question about it. There's no question about it. You need someone who's there for you when the chips are down, who's there as your support, who you help them when they're down, they help you when you're down, who's your partner in life, in everything. So let's put that aside. Separate to that, there are studies that have been done that partners, no matter how much they're there for each other in the hard times, in the bad times, in the horrible times, still it does not prove longevity. So you could be with your partner for the most horrible times ever, but that doesn't equal success long-term in the relationship. What correlates highly with a successful long-term relationship is being there with your partner for the good times, okay? And also the bad, obviously, but for the good times. Partners who seek out good fucking times with each other last. And it sounds like, well, obviously, but no, it's not. Because so many people will be like, oh, you know, like I go and have fun here, I go and have fun, but my, you know, my part, the ball and chain, the fucking ball and chain, it's just routine, 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 routine. And now I want to have fun. So I'm going to go away with these other people. Like I just said, yeah, okay, encourage friendships with other people. That's crucial. But don't be like, oh, I need these people outside to have fun. You should be able to have fun with your partner and without your partner. You should seek fun moments with your partner. And I'm not talking about let's go away in a weekend and have a really fun time and then let's have a mundane month. And then I'm talking about pockets of fun, flirting. Flirt with each other. Flirt when you're 85. You want to be flirting here and there. You want to be joking. Play a cute, harmless, practical joke on your partner. Hide something somewhere weird, surprise your partner, do things that will snap them out of the routine to be like, oh, 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 and realize, you know, when I was talking about, I think it was last episode where I spoke about, or one a very recent episode, I spoke about like intrinsic motivation versus extrinsic motivation and things like that. And I spoke about being present and that's what keeps something enjoyable. This is kind of the alternative when I'm referring to a relationship. When you are present in what's going on, it's a lot easier to stay present in that relationship if you're doing fun things and you're keeping the spark alive. And keeping the spark alive is with the smallest things. It's not these crazy expensive dinners and these weekends away. While that definitely is great and it adds to it, it doesn't have to be that. It's the tiny things. It's a little note that you hid and they found it, you know, in their car, in their where they pack their lunch, or it's the little present. It's the funny joke. It's the flirt that they didn't expect. It's like the passionate kiss that they didn't see coming just before they left the house. It's the little surprises, is these moments of fun. It's these moments of connection. And those are, it sounds like that's the cherry on the top. It's not. That is a non-negotiable for longevity in a relationship. If you have all those 10 things in a relationship, I can guarantee you, you will be miles ahead of people that don't have those 10 things. So to summarize, let's go through the top 10. Number one, safe space to communicate your feelings. Number two, no character assassination ever. Number three, autonomy and a sense of one's own identity to be encouraged with, like in each other. Number four, welcoming bids for connection. Number five, seeking to understand instead of needing to be right. Number six, not having to be angry just because you disagree. Number seven, an effort to understand how the other person receives love and try to cater to that whenever possible. Number eight, strong relationships nurtured outside of the partnership. Number nine, honoring your own boundaries, making them clear and respecting your partner's boundaries. Number 10, sharing in the good moments often. And then the bonus one was understanding your partner's peace offering and leaning into their peace offering and letting your partner know what your peace offering is and leaning into that. So it's technically top 11 non-negotiables for dating. Guys, as always, I'm going to, before I wrap up with my one-liner, always remember anything I say to you about what you should seek in a partner, always ask yourself, am I this person for them? If you want a great partner, be a great partner. If you want a driven person, be the driven person. If you want to date someone who lifts you up, lift people up. Be the person you want to date. It makes it so much easier for yourself. It makes life so much easier. And the beauty of that is when you then find that person, you're not thinking, oh, I'm going to lose them. They're too good for me today. They're like, they're my fucking match. I've met my match. Okay. So when you go through these 10 things, think, how can I do these things for them? Yes, I'm going to make them listen to this episode. Absolutely. But how can I bring that to the table? How can I be of like the best value partner? So then I'm deserving of the best value partner. It's this like attracts like, okay? So always, every time you think, oh, I need my partner to do that, think, am I doing that? Oh, people fucking do that to me. Do I do that? This is where self-awareness comes from. And it's a great exercise in improving yourself and also improving your relationship with yourself. So That is the episode for today. Guys, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. You guys know I love you so much. As always, oh, shout out to my global beans. I'm going to do a shout out to my kiwi beans. I don't think I've shouted them out for a while. And I've got so many beans in New Zealand. Love you so much. And also in California, and Mexico. Mexican beans. I actually think I shouted out my Mexican jumping beans because I remember saying that. Anyway, shout out to my global beans. Love you guys so much. You guys are amazing. As always, remember, be kind to yourself, be kind to your brain. Don't take shit from anyone, and especially don't take shit from yourself. Danke.